This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Last week, Shakespeare fans around the world celebrated the Bard's 450th birthday. And here in Durham, Man Bites Dog Theater opened a modern adaptation of Shakespeare's last masterpiece, or at least many consider it his last, The Tempest. It's called Spirits Two and Fours. And this play by Michael Mayer is a quirky show about 12 superheroes in a submarine. Each superhero has a special power, and they're conducting a telefundraiser for their own production of The Tempest. Two of those superheroes join us in the studio today. The Tune is played by John Hawes. John, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks.
Also with us, Jessica Fleming, who plays Memory Lass. Hi, Jessica.
Hello.
And Jeff Storer is here. Jeff is the creative director of Man Bites Dog and the director of this play. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Frank.
Tell us about the concept here.
Well, it's 12 superheroes that were all at one point the spirits that Prospero let go on the island at the end of The Tempest. And those spirits have stayed around on the island and have taken on roles as superheroes. And in order to revisit their past 400 years ago, they decide to use Shakespeare's play The Tempest as a vehicle for that. So all of the actors play superheroes. They have their Clark Kent identity. They are spirits, and they are also playing characters in The Tempest itself.
Well, so they got three roles to play, and not a lot of dialogue. They're actually kind of on the phones most of the time.
Well, the biggest part of the play is them telefundraising for this production of The Tempest that they want to put on, and all 12 voices are pretty much working at the same time. It's kind of like, I suppose, if you were looking in on the WNC fundraiser right now with the banks of people who are talking on the telephone.
That's it. All nine of me is right. Asking now for you to call 1-800-962-9862. Well, John, what's that like? I mean, you're one of 12 superheroes. So tell us about your superhero first. Let's talk about your superhero character.
Okay. Well, the Tune is kind of a sweet, nerdy guy who wants to be kind of recognized and make an impression as himself. So far as the superheroes, he's kind of like the rock star, the person who women swoon over and, sings and whistles extremely nice melodies. And who doesn't like a nice melody?
And his alter ego?
His alter ego, he's Randall James, who's
desperately
wants to be recognized.
A lot less magnetic. And then, of course, there's the character he plays.
The character, he also plays Ferdinand in the production, who falls in love instantly with Prospero's daughter Miranda after he, shipwrecks, assumes the rest of his, family has died and passed on, and he's kind of alone and falls in love instantly with Miranda and kind of has this beautiful, innocent love with her that happens to happen instantly.
All right, Jessica, tell us about your characters.
Memory Lass has the power to remember all things, which I think she generally uses for good. I think it kind of gets in her way sometimes and has to
what a horrible thought to remember everything. That is just, I can't think of anything more terrifying.
It's a lot of pressure to have that kind of weight. And her secret identity is Susan Tanner, who her job is a tour guide at the local maritime museum. So I think that ties in pretty nicely with her ability to remember and this kind of responsibility too.
And what about her role in The Tempest?
She plays Miranda. So she is Prospero's daughter who has only known life on the island and with all these magical supernatural creatures. And again, when Ferdinand strolls up, she's
smitten.
Taken aback.
She's smitten. can we hear, would you do a little scene for us?
Yeah, sure.
I've got a crush on Memory Lass. We play the two lovers, Ferdinand and Miranda. Hello, Susan?
This is Susan.
Hi. This is Randall.
This is Susan Tanner.
Memory Lass?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Hi. This is Randall.
Oh. Who? I'm sorry.
Randall. Randall James. Ferdinand?
Oh, I remember. Ferdinand. We have a scene together.
Yeah, a couple.
Yeah, you're great.
Really?
Really. I really like working with you.
Wow. Okay. Well, look, I was wondering if maybe you'd like
You were always saying such, I mean, I think anyway, such funny, really sweet stuff.
Yeah?
Like the other day when you just came out and said, "The very instant that I saw you did my heart fly to your service. There resides to make me slave to it, and for your sake am I this patient log man." I loved that.
Yeah, well, that's Ferdinand.
What? Oh, right, from the play. Hey, how did you get on this line, by the way? The phone didn't ring.
Well,
it's
a really geek thing, but a push-button phone is an analog of a miniature keyboard, you know? And if you know the right tonal sequence, which I would, you know, being the tune, you just punch in.
You're the tune?
Yeah.
Wow. And later, Memory Lass gets another phone call from the tune.
Hello, Susan.
This is Susan.
Hi, it's, the tune.
Oh, hi. You were supposed to call me.
Right. Sorry. I've been, you know, busy with the play.
We were supposed to go out.
Yeah, about that. Look, do you know who I am?
The tune?
Well, yes, I'm the tune, but in rehearsals where we spend the most time together, I don't come as the tune.
What? Oh, right. You're Ferdinand.
No! That's the name of my character.
It's just that your Ferdinand is so memorable, and the tune, too.
But me, the guy who is both of those guys, I'm not memorable to you?
Well...
To you. Memory Lass.
Well, sometimes I'm just bad with names.
What are you talking about?
Excuse me?
You're Memory Lass. How could you not remember me?
Well, some kinds of people I just forget.
But you're ruining our scenes. We don't have any chemistry at all. The play is going to be terrible. You don't know my name. You don't know the first thing about me.
Wait, I don't even know you well enough to remember you. And you somehow know enough about me to tell me that I'm ruining the play?
No, no. I'm sorry, really. I just think the scenes would be better if you know, you liked me a little bit.
But I don't think I do like you.
But see, I think you would like me if you could remember me.
But I don't remember you. And I will never remember you. Because some people don't deserve to be remembered.
Wait!
John Haas and Jessica Fleming from a production of Spirits 2 and 4 is on stage now through May 10th at Man Bites Dog Theater. We have more information at our website, stateofthings.org. So, Jeff Stewart, tell us about this because the play is the thing, and for Shakespeare, this was supposed to be his homage to the stage. So, in many ways, Shakespeare is talking about the power of drama in our lives. And
right.
That's a little what's going on here, huh?
And Michelmeyer is aware of that, obviously. The play is sort of a play within a play. Michelmeyer is constantly referring back to the process of theater through the rehearsal process, through the raising of the money in order for theater to exist, through the rehearsals, through the nerves of opening night, through the actual performance itself. So as our play goes on, as Spirits to Enforce goes on, you're also sort of seeing backstage the entire process of this production of The Tempest that the superheroes are trying to put on.
And it's much more than how a bill becomes law. I mean, that's all part of it. But for Shakespeare, and I think in this play as well, what we're seeing is the transformative power of theater. Why bother to do it if our realities just don't seem to mesh? And there's, you know, poor old Toon trying to get someone to fall in love with him, some version of him. What does that mean? And who is it we're falling in love with, right?
Right. Absolutely. Well, there's a great line early on where the character who plays Ariel talks about, he's on the phone and he's talking about raising the money, and he's saying money isn't really money. If you think about it, money is something else. Money is a play. Money is something that it can become. It ceases to be money when you donate to WUNC, or it ceases to become money when you donate to this production of The Tempest. It becomes something else. It becomes art. It becomes something that's bigger than just the bills themselves.
And our capacity to understand or live in the abstract, of course, is what distinguishes us. And I think another important theme in The Tempest, right? I mean, the idea of who is Caliban and who is Ferdinand and who are these characters in Antonio, you know, the supposedly civilized European man who...
But in reality, the villain.
And the villain. All of these questions are questions, I think, the play, The Tempest, whether Shakespeare asked them or not, where certainly the play asks these questions about what it means to be civilized and how are we going to use this great power of ours to live in the abstract, can we create these evil empires, which we can do, or is there some way that theater can transform our lives?
Right. Well, and some of the major themes of the play, as far as I'm concerned, are memory, our revenge, forgiveness. Those are major themes in the play, and Prospero, you know, creates this you know, he has this island where he brings all these people who have fought against him or have worked against him, but he brings them all together and he finds a way to forgive them, and then leaves with them.
And amazing, because he has all this magic power, which he had been using up until then to accumulate more and more power, and then makes this wonderful speech and realizes that that's exactly the wrong way to go. And uses his magic to get rid of his power. How
right,
that?
That's exactly right. And he tosses it off the cliff and gets rid of his staff and gets rid of his books.
Was that speech – I understood, too, that that speech actually was lifted almost word for word from Ovid's Metamorphoses.
That's my understanding, yeah.
Which is interesting, because here's a play that Shakespeare, for one of the few times in his career, doesn't reach back. It's not a history. He doesn't pull from historical sources or even, you know, contemporary plays. It's a little forward-looking. This is the age of discovery. This is a story about a shipwreck, probably a colonial exploit. He's actually looking a little bit ahead, isn't he?
I think so, and I think he's looking at his own, the way in which he will be remembered as well.
So what's it like to play these characters? You've got three of them swirling about, and you're actually not in dialogue. I mean, most of the time there are these sort of imaginary characters on the other end of your phone. What's that like, John?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this scene that you just heard is probably one of the most different from the rest of the play sections. It's an actual section where we're talking with one another. Within the actual production, I can't really speak for Jeff, but I feel like this is kind of like orchestrating a symphony. You've got this cacophony of voices simultaneously, and out of that rises these clear speeches and then subsides back into the busyness. So you have to stay alert. All 12 of us on stage have to be present, active, and focused, and, you know, recognizing where is this going and where am I going to fit into this.
It's a challenging piece in a very exciting sort of way, and it's the kind of thing that we like, that we really love doing at Man Bites Dog.
Well, tell us a little bit more about that, about Man Bites, kind of the theory, the raison d'etre for Man Bites Dog.
Sure. Man Bites Dog is in its 27th season, and this is the final show of that 27th season. All the way through, we've been focused on contemporary playwrights, on voices that might not otherwise make it to the Triangle. And Michael Mayer was certainly one of those voices, a Chicago playwright who had never been produced in this area. We're also really interested in experimenting with form. What can theater be, rather than accepting what we think theater is, really challenging the audience to think about theater in new ways. And this play definitely does that.
Yes, does that. I would think it's challenging for a director, because you have to somehow, for the audience, create bodies. The people that your characters are talking to on the phone have to be embodied. I have to be able to see them, and as a director, to kind of draw that out of an actor would seem to me kind of part of the challenge.
Well, it's not only the person that they're talking to on the phone, but there's an arc throughout the play where time shifts. So where we start in the beginning of the play and where we end up, which is with the play itself, is all done talking to people on the telephone. So the actors have to know for the entire 90 minutes who they're speaking to on the phone, and make us understand and believe that that conversation is actually taking place.
Jessica, in some ways, is that more challenging than having actual embodied actors that you're sort of playing off of on stage?
Sometimes yes and sometimes no. The nice thing about kind of having an imaginary person there is you can play out in your mind what their reaction is going to be, and there's no surprises. So you kind of can build up, like, I know exactly how this conversation is going to go. This is going to go really, really well. But it's also, it is very different than having, you know, a person actually creating eye contact. Because with the scene that me and John just did, we're on opposite ends of the stages and we're not looking at each other. So it's like, while there's still that connection that you're having, even though the person's on stage, they could be 100 miles away.
When it's not an actor who has a role in this play and you're imagining somebody, you know, that you're sort of telefundraising with, does that person change from night to night? Do you have different pictures in your mind? Do you envision different people?
I have a set of about 7 or 8 people that I rotate through, and I have a actual, like, piece of paper with phone numbers on them. So sometimes that conversation goes well with, you know, the third person that I talk to, and sometimes it, you know, goes the other way.
Well, you know, for us, it's 100% of the time. You call that 800 number, and it's always a satisfying experience trying to get in one more time. Michael Mayer, you talked about him. That was an interesting company that he worked with.
Absolutely. It's called Theater Oblek. And it's a Chicago-based company, and he's been working with them for over 20 years. And it is an actor-based, actor-playwright-based company. And my guess is that this piece that we're doing now was a piece that was developed with that company in mind. And they've traveled all over the world, but never to, you know, never to Durham, never to the Triangle. So again, what Man Butts tries to do is it tries to say, hey, look, here's this really interesting playwright. You don't know about him yet, but we're going to be the one that that introduces you to him.
Theater Oblek does sound like a Mad Magazine, correct?
Yes.
Confection, doesn't it? Great show. Thanks so much for being on with us. Jeff Storer is the director of Spirits to Enforce. It's at Man Bites Dog Theater. John Haas plays the tune, and Jessica Fleming, Memory Last. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thanks for having
me. Thanks, Frank.
Spirits to Enforce on stage now runs through May 10th. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org, and you can find out about our producers like Laura Lee or Nicole Campbell or Megan Mataferi or Anita Rao or our technical director, Robin Copley, or Brett Wolf, who is our news director. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.